Hi there. I'm Jade. I would be presenting with Nexus today. Unfortunately, they're ill, so they can't be here. A quick disclaimer before I start this talk. I'm not a cybersecurity professional. This is not a tutorial. This is how we dealt with a real situation. So I developed Continuity, and Continuity is a matrix chat client. Oh, is that stuck? Oh no. Okay. There we go. Continuity is a matrix chat client. Matrix is a distributed chat protocol, if you haven't heard of it. And as a project, we run continuity.org, which is where we keep all of our official accounts. Continuity is a part of an ecosystem of other servers, all built from the same original code base. The currently active names right now are Conduit, Grapevine, and Tunnel. Now, to set the scene for this talk, it's 4 a.m. and I can't sleep. So I open up my computer to download some books for my Kindle. And I see this. This is quite bad. If you can't quite see what's going on there, my project account has just sent a message. Admin query raw iter user ID device token. And that command just printed out all of the session tokens for my account. There are a few odd things going on with that message, but we'll get to that later. Now, I saw this message 23 seconds after it was sent. That was incredibly lucky because that meant we had time to react. If I hadn't seen it, things would probably be a lot worse. But what's the first thing you do when you suspect your account is compromised? The first thing you do is you alert your team. The second thing you do is panic, right? And then you go through and you try to limit the damage. You disable the account's admin access. We suspended the account so it couldn't log in. We reset the password in case that was how they broke in. We disabled all of the login tokens that just got leaked. And then we started pulling out the plugs on all of the servers that we had access to. Unfortunately, the person who manages the continuity.org home server was asleep, so that's one plug that we couldn't pull out. So we're safe for now. But how did the attacker do that? How do we stop them from doing it again? It's time to investigate. Identifying the attacker's server is pretty easy. Their account joined the room that message was sent in, like just under an hour earlier. And we go and we look at the event, and looking from other servers, everything seems to check out. There's nothing suspicious from that point of view. But I have a hunch. And so I get the contents of the event from the continuity.org home server. And we can see there are the auth events. I'll explain what those are later. And you can see the body of the message where that admin command is. There's some extra data there that marks it as part of a thread, and it's a server notice for some reason, the event ID. And then there's some more data there, like what room it was in, the sender, and some signatures. But something is missing, I realize. And that is the client transaction ID. Whenever a matrix client sends a message, it adds a unique identifier to the message so it knows when it gets it back. But this one doesn't have it. So the event must have come through a different route. It must have come over the Federation API, which meant it came from a different server. But other servers don't have this account, so it has to be forged. Now, in the meantime, whilst we're investigating this, the attacker is causing as much damage as possible. We've locked them out of my account, but they're going and exploiting the vulnerability in each of our public rooms, one by one, to ban every server from the room so we can't communicate with people. And we're really feeling the time pressure. It's now 5 a.m. It's been an hour since we were attacked. And every member of the team who is awake at that point is following their own little path of investigation. And I have a hot tip for you. If you are being attacked by a malicious actor, you don't talk to them. They will mislead you. Nex had identified the attacker and started a conversation with them. And from them, we got told, you know, they were using a modified version of our software to perform the attack. But they also sent Nex down a whole sidetrack where it might have been a cryptography attack with signatures. It wasn't, and that was a waste of a couple of hours. The next real insight that we had was once we got access to logs from other servers, and we could see failed attack attempts. And based on these failed attack events, we could work out, you know, the attacker required knowledge of the room. They required auth events. Now, auth events are previous messages in the room that control who has permission to do what. So when the room was first created, when permissions were set, when someone joined the room. And each event has to have these IDs so that when the message is sent, if a server doesn't know about them already, it can go and fetch them. And that just means that the attacker already had to have an account in the room to perform the attack. So our private rooms, we thought, were safe. And the attacker was handcrafting events. So that explained all of the oddities with the first message. They hadn't sent it through a normal client. They'd manually typed out all the JSON. But it's 5:30 now, and one of our maintainers has to go to sleep. And we're on a call, and now it's 6:10, and I have to go to sleep. So we call in external help, Olivia from the Grapevine Project, which is one of the other projects based on this same code base. And we get some more useful information. The attacker starts probing a server we have set up with debug logging and instrumentation on it. And we now know the last piece of the vulnerability. The vulnerability is when an attacker or when the server leaves a room. But at this point, Nex expires, and it's only Olivia left. But it's 7 in the morning, so people should be waking up soon. Now, before we get to the vulnerability, how do you leave a room in Matrix? To leave a room, your server has to send a leave event, so a message that's saying it's left the room. But to make that event, it requires knowledge of the state of the room, who's in it, what the auth events are, and so on and so on. But your server, when it's leaving a room, doesn't necessarily always have that information. For example, if you get invited to a room and reject that invite, you've never joined the room, but you're still leaving it. You have to get that information somehow. So the leaving server picks a server that it knows is in the room properly and has all that information, and asks it to get all that information for it and make a leave event. And then that server returns the event, and the leaving server signs that and sends it back for that server to distribute to everyone else in the room so that they know that you've left. What could go wrong here? I wonder. I think there are a few steps missing there. I mean, let's go through continuity's code first. So for each server we know about, we send that federation request and we try. If it's successful, we take that and we go to the next step. We pass that and get the JSON from it. We insert some metadata into that, and we sign that event, and then we send it back. Yeah, there's still something missing there. Validation. The attacking server could return anything in that that response, not just the leave event, but a normal message or a ban or anything like that. So it's time to develop the patch. And Olivia works hard and makes a patch where we basically insert that validation. We check the event type, the sender, the affected user, the room that it's in, the type of membership that it is, whether it's a join or a leave or so on and so on. But there's a missing piece still. How did they trigger that exploit? Because your client doesn't just leave rooms by itself. You have to manually trigger that. And at this point, there are all sorts of wild theories going around. Maybe it was a Discord bridge that got broken or something like that. But I've woken up, and we now have access to the logs for continuity.org. And on continuity.org, we run a little bot that has enhancements. And this was the bot that was leaving the rooms. And it had a plugin on it that manages which rooms that it joins. But rather than just ignoring invites, it would automatically reject any invites. So that was what was triggering the leaves. So now we have a patch, we know exactly what happened, and it's time to distribute the patch. Now, like I was saying, we're a part of an ecosystem of similar projects. So three other projects are vulnerable in exactly the same way. The spec is also missing some validation, but not all of it. And some projects we have communication channels with, some we don't. And it takes a few hours to make sure everyone's got patches prepared and everyone can hit the release button at the same time. And we released the security patch from the attack to the patched release. It was 13 hours and 45 minutes. Right. We still have a couple of minutes, so we can talk about some of the ways we're securing continuity against similar attacks in the future. We've added a lot of security features. So we've added the ability to lock an account using an API so that you can immediately prevent an account from performing any actions. We've added a command to forcefully log out of all of a user's sessions so that instead of taking 10 minutes to do that, it takes us 30 seconds next time. We've added configuration defined admins so that if the attacker gains access to the server, they can't promote their permissions. And we've added hardening to make sure that commands don't get executed outside of places where you'd expect them. We've also been working on Project Drawbridge. Over 100 commits hardening the Federation APIs, which we haven't released yet, but we're going to release soon. All right, any questions? We've got 1 minute, so one question.
Questions? So how difficult was it getting CVEs for the vulnerabilities?
Oh, that is actually shockingly easy. One sec. Where's my mouse gone? I can actually show you that right now. Change. So start mirroring. On my screen right now, we have the GitHub Security Advisory. Now, GitHub provide a really handy feature which allows you to manage vulnerability reports coming in, and it assigns them IDs. To get a CVE, we just fill out the security advisory and hit a button to request a CVE number. And it takes maybe a week, and they come back to you with a CVE number. And now we can just click publish. CVE done. Great.
Any other questions?
Perfect. Right then.
Okay, that was all. Thank you.